Thanks to our new sponsor, Maeve, for supporting our podcast. Dogs need unprocessed, high-protein, low-carb diets that kibble and fresh foods just don't deliver. Make the switch to raw today. Right now, Maeve is offering $40 off your first order at meetmaeve.com/filmsack. And thanks today to Sunday for supporting FilmSack. Sunday can help you grow a beautiful lawn without the guesswork or the nasty chemicals. Full season plans start at just $109, and you can get 20% off when you visit getsunday.com/filmsack20 at checkout.
Hello! How y'all doing? Sorry for the tardiness. My name is Emerald, that's OJ, and we are your animal wranglers today with Haywood Hollywood Horses. Now, did you know that the very first assembly of photographs in sequential order to create a motion picture was a 2-second clip of a black man on a horse? Yes, it was. Yes, it was. Look it up. Now, I know you guys know Edward Morbridge, the grandfather of motion pictures, who took the pictures that created that clip. But does anybody know the name of the black jockey that rode the horse?
No. There's a wheelchair on your roof.
This is FilmSack. Oh, sure.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to FilmSack. This is FilmSack, episode 597, and continually mining the very depths of film entertainment for all mankind. I'm Scott Johnson, joined today by Brian. Is that strawberry jam running down your bay windows, Dunaway?
It absolutely is. Would you like a piece? Oh, hi.
Hi.
This week on FilmSack, we do our best to avoid direct eye contact with Amazon Prime is to not challenge its dominance and end up getting sucked into the cloud as we watch a 2022 sci-fi horror film where we scream like we're on some sort of sky roller coaster that runs on horse meat and nopes. Hey, stay out of my pocket, Amazon. That metal coinage is mine, not for Jeff Bezos to throw back at Earth as he laughs maniacally and flies away in his spaceship to Mars, laughing and killing my paw in the process with a hot, fast coin to the head. Yeehaw, you space cowboy hat-looking mofo, and don't come back! Hey, you forgot Elon. Anywho, I wrote my intro under duress this week with my newfound fear of flying cryptids swooping down and pouching me in their cryptid cheeks for a snack at a more convenient time while I scream up to the negative, no, sir, absolutely not, by no means, and nay. I'm not looking for nor hanging around for sky death, but still, maybe I should just peek my head outside and take a little look. That can't hurt, right? Just a little, and I'm dead. Randy, you know the drill. Delete my cryptid porn searches like sky vaginas and lipless ladies kissing and Bigfoot fetish. Uh-huh. I'm one sick dude.
Good Lord, you went hard this week.
Woo.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Woo, hardcore.
That was awesome. All right, with us also, Randy, don't piss off the sitcom apes unless you intend to fist bump them first, Jordan.
Aloha, Scott. Brian. Randy. Now that I have your attention, I'm going to give you a safety training for working around a live horse and never actually mention the live horse or your parameters. It's Hollywood, baby. Thank you for coming out here to Agua Dulce, which everyone else from LA calls Santa Clarita because, honestly, it's Santa Clarita. We've been having torrential rains all winter, so the hills are covered in bright green grasses, but I want you to pretend that didn't happen, and it's really, really dusty and rural out here, okay? Yeah. Now, let's get on to what you're doing out here in Santa Clarita, as long as you follow my three easy steps. Number one, open a car sales business. I mean, it makes total sense that a business where you have to pay people to clean lots and lots of cars that are sitting outside, that would work really well surrounded by windy dirt. Number two, bring hand-cranked film cameras out here. There is nothing like a sand dune desert for compatibility with changing out huge film reels in a delicate machine that you crank. Number three, don't look up.
Yeah, don't do that. Word. Three is important. I agree with that third one a lot.
Do not. I hate sand. Gets in everything.
Yep. Especially my camera. Especially my camera, says
with Michael Wincott.
Love that guy.
We're all going to
all of your audio clips are just that guy.
I love him.
Right. We're all going to impersonate him later.
Love him so much. Sure. With us finally, Brian, he warned us to beware the giant cloud anus Hibbit.
It's true. I warned you, and I should have warned you for the following.
Mm. Oh, shit.
Oh.
It's going to get wild in here.
Yep. Not the full intro. Full intro is like 2 minutes. You were working for the tech squad at the not quite Best Buy when we met you. We took you home. You helped us set up a camera rig, which you then continued to view. Let's go up an octave. Now, 2 days later on, your van is still at our house, along with a bunch of alien spew. Because what we're dealing with gobbles up all of our horses and barely takes the time to chew. Nope, not a UFO. It's like a giant ray with the bright blue alien sphincter. Nope, not a UFO. Except in jellyfish mode, it's got a bright green alien sphincter. It's really quite a sight, and it usually comes at night. You'd better yoon balloon or we will all be sorry. Not a UFOOJ. It's a UAP. Oh, not a UFOOJ. It's a UAP. Oh.
Wow. You said UN balloon.
Yoon balloon.
Yoon balloon. And like kind of like. Kind of like the guy's name, the actor's name.
Yeah, that's the actor's name.
That is brilliant.
That's really good.
A yoon balloon.
Yoon balloon.
Clever girl.
That was really good.
And I turned it into a verb. You'd better yoon balloon.
Well done. Good Lord. You guys all rocked it today. That must mean that we've got good stuff ahead. Let's let Scott Fletcher explain the film we're about to talk about.
Nope. The residents of the Lonely Gulch in Inland California bear witness to an uncanny and chilling discovery.
Oh, my Lord. Is that what we're in for here? Good Lord.
That was the real Scott Fletcher, too. I can tell.
Yeah, real Scott Fletcher. We got him, too. We have him for our next film as well. So
I think he records those on Friday nights on Twitch, didn't he? Because I think I saw him on there doing this thing.
Last night they do their little Catterday thing. Or no, it's on Saturdays, I guess. But they get together and they record live and boom, there it is.
I really want to thank you guys for agreeing to watch this for FilmSack because, for starters, we don't always do this kind of thing. Like it's a very highly regarded movie, but when it hit Amazon Prime, like Brian Ibbett noticed it really fast and was like, he's going to watch it. Like everyone should watch it. Mm-hmm. And you know, he said, look, well, if we haven't seen it, we should go ahead.
Well, I tried to disagree when you asked us, but you misunderstood what I meant. I said, nope.
Yeah. He said, nope. And you said, oh no,
we're doing it.
No, we really want to do it. Yeah.
And it's like a movie where I really, really hope that anyone listening who might have any urge to watch this movie stops and watches this movie and then continues on with this podcast because it's you can only see this once. And we will absolutely ruin it. There are so many things in this movie that are completely ruinable. That are not just spoilers, but again, you can only see this once. There's a scene where he first goes out to the barn and you realize, oh wow, there's some really awful things approaching him and whatever. You can only see that once. That's it. Mm-hmm. After that that viewing,
I disagree.
I disagree.
Are you
too.
Saying you only want second, to watch it once, or are you
this is
saying
my second
that
watching
and you can only experience the surprise once?
Yeah, yeah, exactly. I mean, there were things that I picked up this time that knowing what was about to happen, I was like, oh yeah, all right, cool, and kind of getting to see. Not just the event itself, but also the kind of the lead up to the event and how there are a lot more parallels that I didn't pick up on the first time
with
I watched this film. Yeah, with the chimp, with the balloon popping that freaks out the chimp and the balloon popping that blows up the alien and the stupid motorcycle guy, the absolutely unnecessary, which I'm sure we'll talk about, a motorcycle guy whose helmet looks like the alien with the one dot and
and oh. but also looks like the thing that freaked out the horse.
Right.
Oh, wow. Good like point. Thing. Yeah.
So you're talking about elements, and I agree. You watch a movie more than once, you're going to see lots of elements that you didn't catch the first time. Mm-hmm. And I'm just yeah. talking about being scared because you don't know what you're gotcha. Seeing, yeah. what's about yeah. to happen.
You can do that plenty of times. I prove that all the time when I watch a movie 10 years later when you totally forget everything.
That's but true. Yeah. I get your point. Yeah. Like I couldn't watch this a week later, but. I don't know, maybe I could because I want to see all the details and stuff, but I feel like, you know, Jordan Peele now has a reputation for putting a bunch of symbolism, some of it obvious, some of it more subtle in his movies. And so I automatically go into one of these going, all right, here we go. We're going to look for all these symbolisms. And this is commentary on the film business, and this is commentary on race relations in the film business, and, you know, all this kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. What I didn't expect was, and he said it many times, in interviews and stuff, what I didn't expect is just kind of a really fun alien romp at the end.
Yes.
Yeah. And you know? I think if you go in, I almost say you almost do a disservice if you go into it focusing too much on what are the symbols and not just let it take you.
Yeah.
I mean, if you see the symbols as you're watching it, naturally great, but you don't want to be so focused on, ooh, the water. What does it mean that you...
right, is that it? I feel attacked.
It's a dig. Oh, yeah. That was,
yeah, I feel attacked.
It's not so subtle.
But yeah, yeah. I generally, I have the, you know, we watch on FilmSack, we watch a movie every week. And that's just what we have to do. Mm-hmm. I watch more movies than every week. So we may be a little bit ahead of some people that watch movies as far as how many we consume. Mm-hmm. And I usually have the ability to just turn all that stuff off. I'm like, okay, I'm going to watch a movie. I'm not going to question any symbolism until after the movie. And then that's my favorite part, when I get to sit and think about all the shit I saw. And then will I revisit it a second time? Do I need to revisit it? And that's just anybody who goes to see lots of movies. I think they have the ability to turn it off.
And I like a movie that makes me think and stays with me. This is a movie that did that. I thought about this movie a lot after it was over. And, I don't think, you know, I've heard some people say, well, this is his lightest fare of his three films that he's directed so far. And, you know, don't go in expecting big cultural conversations around it or anything like that. And so I kind of went in expecting it to be a little more fluff and less substance. But I don't think that's ever going to be true of his movies. I think we're always going to find his movies compelling and interesting and a little twisted. Like the whole Steven Yeun backstory, monkey on set, 80s sitcom nightmare thing.
Gordy. 90s,
chimpanzee. Gordy, all that. Yeah.
Yeah. Yes, we're going to interchange those words all the field that show monkey, ape, and chimpanzee.
Good luck. Chimpanzee. It's just get used to it, everybody.
Yeah.
That whole thing was, you know, for some people, I saw a lot of comments on reviews and stuff, like completely confused about why it's even in there. And I'm like, well, no, there's parallels. Like when he's staring up into that space anus, his whole life has been shaped by this. He's staring up into that space thing. And for a second there, he thinks he's having another fist bump moment where I'm the survivor. I'm the one that will take us and find peace with whatever this thing is here.
Right.
Which isn't true at all. And that makes it, you know, more shocking and horrifying and everything else to know what really happened to those people. It's something else. I just don't know who else is making movies that make me feel
really
this way.
It's really exciting and raises tension a lot when you have a character, you know, who has survived something and then they have to reapproach it because you got to ask which one of these characters are going to die. And this, that was the question. It's like they stopped the Gordy, the old story, onset of Gordy show, at the point where we don't know what the monkey would have actually done. Right. We don't know. Yeah. So, but now he finally gets to face it. Why did he survive? He's probably got survivor's guilt and everything else. And his, you know, he wants to face his fears. And also, so he looks at it.
Yeah.
Also, we spend the whole movie thinking of him as the hero. And he is. He's the protagonist of the film. But it never really occurs to you, again, this may be a first time viewing thing. It never really occurs to you, oh, he could be just like totally wrong here. Because the person who's so consistently totally wrong is his sister. She is portrayed as so opposite him in every kind of way, and especially his experience. So in the end, when she ends up being right and he's wrong, that's a great story.
Mm-hmm. You know? It is. Yeah. And I also really liked, there's, you know, I don't know, countless pseudo horror science fiction movies where siblings are involved and they're trying to survive together and all that. This is easily one of my favorite portrayals of a sibling relationship. Yeah. And a part of it was, first of all, she was, this is 2022, right? She was not, she was robbed for no nomination for this supporting role. For she's amazing in this. I don't even know. I didn't even know who she was. Now I just want to know everything she's in from now on. She's incredibly good.
Yeah.
And he,
you're reminding us that you don't watch Saturday Night Live or other things.
Yeah. I haven't seen, I don't watch SNL. So for me, she's new. So Kiki Palmer, kind of new for me. Daniel Kaluuya, am I saying it right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah,
he's,
yeah.
He's always
you've
got...
You've seen him in several things.
I've seen him in all kinds of stuff, but he has always got this amazing kind of broody, stand-in-the-back kind of thing going on.
Yes,
it's hard to explain.
Yeah.
Anyway, watching the two of those, which are cannot be more different than each other, right? These are so different in terms of who they are, despite their you know, blood relation, that they just... It makes for some of the most fun... Some of the most disconcerting. I rooted for them so freaking hard at the end. Like,
yeah, the scene where they finally come together and they do some really fast hand jive on that porch is just it's so it's a relief that they've finally found each other, you know, as allies.
Yep, instead of being standoffish to each other.
They do that rapid high five thing. Yeah, that was awesome. Oh my gosh.
If you, and this is another recommendal, I did this on TMS, but another recommendation for Judas and the Black Messiah, if you haven't seen it, about the Black Panther group, and not the Black Panther film, which he was also in, but...
Right, yeah.
Yeah, I love it. He gets to be in two Black Panther films, one of which is not really a Black Panther film.
One, the real, quote-unquote, real Black Panther.
Yeah, yeah. That's
awesome. This movie, Nope, it feels very, very much like Daniel Kaluuya's episode of Black Mirror, which was called 15 Million Merits.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. A good one.
There's just like, there's something about the way he approaches the character that just feels really, really similar.
He's really good at... looking like he's absorbing everything and doesn't respond until it's absolutely necessary. He reads all the information, and that's just perfect for this particular character. I don't know what influenced which, but it was perfect for the story.
I agree.
As a director, as a writer, when you're thinking of a role where you've got a character who doesn't have to say much, but does all the acting just with their expressions and their faces, you've almost got it. You know, if you've got the right kind of character for Daniel Kaluuya, you put him in there. But if you've got a film where you've got a really wordy character, really, you know, a character who's got a ton of dialogue, you almost need to say, all right, we want Daniel Kaluuya for this. So I'm going to like edit down a third of his dialogue because he works so much better without it.
We're going to give all the rest of it to Brandon Perea or that, the Fry's electronics guy.
Dude, Angel's fake, awesome.
James,
I hated Angel at first. I hated him right
Franco.
Away.
Yeah, just James Franco.
I just went, come on, man, this guy. I don't like this kind of character. He's freaking, you know, slacker.
But that was the purpose, right?
He's amazing. I loved him in the end. Great. I thought Angel was one of my favorite characters. Him and Michael Wincott's character, whose name, by the way,
Michael Wincott.
His name in this movie is Antlers Holst.
All he does is sit around and watch old reel-to-reel films of animals killing each other. The character is amazing, and you throw Michael Wincott on top of that. God, that was fantastic.
He's great. Mm-hmm. Everything about him is just. I'll watch any movie with him in it. I love. You know, I don't know why we haven't done it yet, but we got to do Count of Monte Cristo. He's fantastic at that.
Yeah.
I just want to say really, really quick, you know who that guy was a discount for me? It was not what you just said.
Not James Franco?
No. He's a discount Paul Walker.
Oh, interesting. Well, with the hair he had.
Rest in peace.
Yeah, he doesn't have that blonde tip thing going in his IMDb photo. Right. He looks like a whole different person, but
Brandon Perea.
Man, he cracked me up. And I, you know, finding out that Fry's had closed all their stores before this movie was made is so great because that Fry's was a real Fry's. They used an empty ass Fry's.
I tried to find the timeline because I was like, man, no way did Fry's sign off and having just dick employees. These are just douchebag employees that are they can't possibly portray this way. And I was like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
The best thing about it was that the whole place was empty because that was so realistic.
Pretty wild.
We never had Fry's here in Colorado, at least not to my knowledge, but I'm very familiar with the Fry's.
I had two when we lived out in Phoenix, and we had one in Georgia not too far.
Yeah, the only one I ever been to is the Vegas one. That's as close as I
was closer to a micro center than a Best Buy, right? Or did they also have your household electronics?
They had everything.
Yeah,
so,
fries had everything.
Okay, so more like a Best Buy then.
Yeah. Closer to a Micro Center, though, because a big part of the store was about parts for building your own computer.
Oh, yeah, you could build your own computer, walk around and go, well, this is cool.
Fry's had groceries. Fry's had, I'm not kidding. Like, Fry's had a massive selection of music and movies.
They had a little restaurant inside the one in Vegas for a while. A little coffee.
All the ones I went to.
Burger place thing.
Restaurants.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It was I really liked the idea of Ultimate Electronics, Incredible Universe, Fry's, these places that were just massive warehouses full of the shit I'm into.
Made for us.
But I used to go in there and walk out with nothing all the time. And so it makes me think.
That's the problem, right?
That's the problem.
It's almost like too much choice garners no choice, right?
That's pretty great.
Media play used to be that for me. I'd walk into a media play and be like, okay, I want everything, so I'm walking out with nothing.
Right, I'm getting nothing.
Now, the one actor in this that was the other employee that you barely saw, her name is Barbie Ferreira. She was Mike's first exposure to her was that Euphoria show on HBO. She's really good on it.
Is she our chick in the bucket? I mean, or was she just there kinda, for something to bounce off?
She didn't have any follow up to do, but technically, I guess.
I actually feel like Angel was. Angel is a part of everything, and then suddenly he is just forgotten.
He survives getting sucked up with the tarp and the barbed wire,
but you don't see him
when the fog lifts, you know, when the dust lifts at the end.
I really thought they were going to have like some resolution for him and Antlers.
Yeah.
And they just don't.
Grab a bucket.
Yeah, he gets bucket. We'll give him bucket. That's fair.
And they kind of did that to Keith David too, because they never really said he did, but they did say left the land for us and stuff. But so I was like, okay, I guess.
Well, I feel like
it was pretty clear he did.
Yeah. When they showed his face and he had a coin through his head and he was sitting there with one eye open and not breathing, that told me
I was so sad because I was so excited. I'm like, oh my God, I'm going to get some Keith David in my life. Yes, baby, because I love me some Keith David.
You get a little bit of him. You get a little flashback, but not much.
That first scene is really well portrayed. That first scene, you just get everything. It's so much backstory all at once. You get how it's Keith David's ranch and his son OJ here is competent, but he's a little bit set apart and they don't, you know what I mean? And like all that stuff. And then when stuff starts hitting the dirt, you're like, I have no idea. I'm telling you, please watch this movie if you haven't yet, because you can only once will you ever be watching this first scene going, what the hell am I seeing? I do not know what's happening.
It's what's great. Also, you know what else he's really good at is credits, opening credits that will not make sense until the end of the film.
Yeah.
I love that.
This movie.
It's so cool.
This movie, I did love that. This movie gave me several times, especially in the beginning, Tremors. It gave me the feeling of Tremors. I'm like,
interesting combo. Your comparison. Yeah. I didn't think about that, but totally,
sure.
Yeah. It kind of strayed away from that later on, but it was pretty much that dynamic. You know, things were happening, it was weird. And what I didn't expect is they
did this on purpose, obviously. This thing's supposed to look like a ship, and it's the old 50s style saucer ship. And so we're all just
but
like,
that wasn't his final form.
Yeah, it was never not only that, but it was never a ship. It's just some kind of organic thing. Then it turns into like a weird looking fairy thing.
Okay. That's
shredded turns, hotel.
That's when it turns into the space vagina, where it's shaking is at you. It's like, and it's got you up in that little, you know, in that little hole that, anyway.
And it was also, it was square. You might call that a box. I'm just saying they kind of,
right.
You know.
I'm just saying there was things there that maybe they were implied, but that's fine. Or maybe I just see stuff.
Maybe you're just a pervert. Maybe. Yeah, it could be.
Yeah. Maybe
totally. I feel like the movie is trying to tell us that there's one single creature from outer space. Right. And it's trying to tell us that in steps. We're not like, because at first we're like, oh, there's a cloud ship and it's got aliens in it. And then you know, like the movie slowly gives you better and better looks at it until you realize, oh, I've been seeing inside a single creature. Yeah. And that is really brilliant to me, because it's like the whole last hour of the movie slowly giving you each better and better and better look at this thing.
Yeah.
Until the end when when the only woman in the world gets a picture of the alien looking up from a well camera. It's the funniest.
Are those things, by the, those exist? Could I get a well?
I've never seen anything like that.
If they don't, I want one, because when she photobombs those people at the beginning, first I was like, what the crap is that? And I'm like, oh.
Yeah, it's just a camera look down the well thing. But what a weird thing. And then it poops out of like a Polaroid style thing out the side.
Yeah, it's Chekhov's camera. And did anybody recognize it for that at the time? Did you actually think,
absolutely,
that camera's going to come back?
No, I didn't think so. I just didn't think about it. But I just thought, well, how's that ever going to get used again? And then I just thought, well, that's a weird thing to have in your movie anyway. And then my brain just moved on from it. So the fact that it came back again was actually kind of cool, but also useless, because here's what I would say about that. Mm-hmm. Even the shot it got, doesn't look like anything interesting. It just looks
You can't take that and say, here's proof of aliens. Somebody's saying, nope, here's proof of kites.
Yeah, here's kite proof.
And did Michael Wincott's camera survive that he handheld the camera, then he went in?
I doubt it.
So I don't know. And did the original film that they were recording from the IMAX hand camera work too?
Yeah, I don't think any of that shit works.
And we also asked, could it possibly have been any good? That crank is wobbling the camera.
Right. And it's going to look like Bigfoot footage, right?
It was going to look bad no matter what. So at the end, the proof is whatever that is in the air is going to land soon. That goo is going to.
Is it the kind of proof that Oprah would take? You know?
Well, don't know. Maybe. 90s Oprah, maybe.
Here's some alien meat and
I mean, I guess even if that thing that popped it and then it floats to the ground, one assumes that, you know, not in this movie obviously, but it's scientists that get substance. A hold of that stuff and they go, huh, this is weird. This isn't normal.
I was wishing it burst into flames and just burn out in the atmosphere, so there'd be no proof at all. That was just
that would have been better. Yeah, I would have liked that.
I hate movies like that where
I know that's the reason why I'd want to do it. You know, so
the main character destroys cars and vehicles and stuff like that to finally get away and end this thing, and there's no proof left over that it existed. So
I love that.
Say, no, it's because there was a alien serial killer that I had to get rid of. Okay.
In a way, it felt like that was a huge idea in his movie, is to say, we're going to try like crazy to make this thing be seen, capitalize on it, prove it, like all this, to the degree of like you're using a well that's way too far away and has a big block in front of it, and like it's really hard to tell anything. Like, basically, he was saying, kind of saying, hey, this is why you can never get proper photos of aliens and UFOs.
Right.
Because
and Bigfoot and Loch Ness Monster.
All of it,
things like that. Yeah.
Which I really appreciated, if that's what he's saying. I don't know if he is or not. That's why I like his movies, because you get to interpret what you think Jordan Peele's trying to say to you. And I like that a lot.
Yeah, I love it.
I mean, this guy, you see his name and it says produced, written, and directed by. And you're like, man, what a moment that dude's having.
Did you guys see any of the Twilight Zone that he did?
I saw a few of them. Yeah.
Apple TV. Yes.
Never did.
They were good, and they were not all, you know, race focused. It did, you know, was a subject in a lot of them, but they did, I think, pay a really nice homage to Twilight Zone, except the last one took me completely out of the series.
Oh, really?
It absolutely breaks the fourth wall. He's directing as the star of the very last episode of Twilight Zone, and it really bothered me.
Oh, wow.
Interesting. I don't think this movie had the race focus here. I didn't, this is like
oh,
a,
no, very
this is a universal,
to...
this is a universal fears, right? This well, is, he, this yes. is anybody's fears.
And he said that he did any a race. Bunch of press last year.
Yeah.
When this movie came out, and he was asked repeatedly. So what's the race story here? And he's like, not really. It's like, he said, he did say like everything has racial elements. And so that this does
too. His experience. He has to put it in there, right? Yeah.
He was like,
I think there's very little of it in Us as well. Like Us feels like, that's a very small side plot.
The racial message of his last two films, I think, is less about a direct one. Like it was in Get Out, but in these two movies, again, here I am, a white guy interpreting this, but I think what I'm seeing is he's making movies with young, amazing black actors. He's telling stories with a black perspective, and he's combining that with other perspectives that are a little uncomfortable. Like you go to the thing to show your training, and you're getting ready to film a scene with that lady and all that stuff, and you're doing that whole thing. It feels a little like they're outnumbered. You know what I mean? The sister has to come in and kind of do the PR and make it a little more fun, and then nobody's really listening to what he's saying, and the white people are total a-holes. Like, it's just kind of it's got those bits.
Yeah,
which is a common thing for him, but I don't think he wants to be.
Well, that's a reflection of his experience as an American, right? I mean, that's just his experience, and then he's also exploring what it means to be just a human in general.
Great. It was really good. It's hard for me to find much flaw in any of his movies. This one in particular, right. I really, really liked it. I kind of went in thinking I wasn't going to like it as much. Don't know why. Didn't tell anyone.
I had no idea.
Yeah, I don't like it nearly as much as Us or Get Out. I feel like I mentioned the completely unnecessary. I guess this is how you get a motorcycle, is how you have a TMZ paparazzi guy show up. And I also TMZ. Felt like the...
With a very complicated camera. I love that.
Right.
I love his helmet, his camera, everything about that guy.
And the fact that it has to be an electric motorcycle.
Everything was so foreign feeling, right? And that just made it even better. I loved it.
And I also was disappointed me the whole, the Jupiter's Claim audience all getting sucked up completely off screen. And really all you get is
the roller coaster screams.
The roller coaster screams work. They were very, that actually did add a nice little element of fear, but he could have easily shown something on screen instead of just giving a Steven Yeun rolling around in a sleeping bag.
Well, they showed him getting sucked up. The part where it was like outside and really thick, heavy dust. There was a bunch of little bodies flying up in there. That was a thing.
I did need more of the lipless co-star who had gotten who had gotten beat.
Who wears the T-shirt of how she used to look?
That was so creepy to me because it didn't need to be there at all. It was just like this stark reminder of.
Yeah.
Ah, that time with the monkey and the ape tearing everybody to pieces.
I tried to figure out if that was now this movie wants you to, as an audience member, to say nope. You know, that's what they want you to do. They want Jordan Peele's wanting you to be the type of person who's watching a movie, looking at something and going, nope. I'd just leave. There's just no way I would interact with this. I can't stop looking, but nope. And so, what's your favorite nope moment from here? I think that showing that scene with the lipless lady, that is really high on my list of I go nope.
Yeah, I found that the Gordy's home stuff to be so much scarier than the rest of the film. That scene where you're just watching.
Will he? Won't he?
Right, and then he makes eye contact, and that's my point of like nope,
nope.
Yep,
That was really actually, there's something in that scene that I can't stop thinking about, which is that's a CGI chimpanzee.
Yeah.
Like,
right.
Yeah,
it totally is.
And as it going to get closer to the camera, you realize, oh man, I'm going to see right through this stuff. So they lay a veil down from the tablecloth between you and the CGI chimpanzee. And there's just something about that where it's like, I know this is Hollywood trickery, and it has captured working. My heart.
Yeah,
like,
part of it. I'm glad you said that because that veil did part of it. The other part of it is him breathing very heavily into the veil. It made it visceral and it made me forget that there was no real threat there.
He talks a lot about symbolically talking about what we look at on the internet and that's kind of what we're doing here. He's kind of looking at things through kind of like a veil. And it's brilliant. But the other nope part for me had to be the when he's out in the horse barn and it's all dark,
the kids,
the neighbor kids are popping up with the alien shit. Like when shadows start moving, I'm like, that's what I'm really like.
Yeah.
Nope.
Like you see the shape there and then all of a sudden the shape kind of grows and a weird little creature's coming outside of it. Yeah.
You have to ask yourself in that moment, why isn't OJ running? Like this is something he would, why is he? And you slowly realize, oh, he really does believe he's in control here.
Yeah.
You know, like he's getting out his phone to take a picture and stuff. And it's like, okay, so it's a different kind of scary. It's not like M. Night Shyamalan, you know? This is a different thing because this character is being portrayed in a certain way in this. And like, I actually ask out loud, why doesn't he seem to be more interested in taking care of his horses right now? Like, there's clearly some sort of creature is threatening his horses. I just don't.
Well, we've kind of established that he's kind of in two worlds. He kind of wants to stay, you know, and honor his dad's memory and their family's history and legacy. In other ways, he's like, bump this, I'm out of here. But then he always comes back to it, right? So that's like his struggle, his character struggle in this
film. And I want to argue with Brian Ibbett here. I think this is one of the best films of 2022. I think it's by far the biggest snub for Best Picture at the Oscars. Wow, how was this not one of the first five films that got nominated for Best Picture? I do not know.
Right.
But like I'm curious, like, from if you're the Oscars voters, Brian Ibbett, why are you snubbing this?
I don't know. I mean, I did see a lot of the other films. I didn't feel like there were a few in there that I didn't feel like deserved to be up in the 10 that were nominated. I can't off the top of my mind remember what they were, but
Top
Gun Maverick comes to mind. Elvis comes to mind.
Oh, Elvis! Right. Elvis should not have been in that nomination.
Yeah, that would have been about this. I know Ibbett's.
No, they should have swapped those two. Put Nope in for say Nope to Elvis. Nope in, there you go.
Yeah, I don't know. I still didn't feel like it was as. I feel like it worked better as a. As kind of a blockbuster that makes fun of blockbusters, but not didn't quite have the
maybe it didn't take itself the depth serious
for
enough.
Me. Yeah, that the other films that I enjoyed had.
Right.
If it was a lot shorter and like edited really, really tight, this could have been something you'd call a grindhouse movie.
Right.
You know, but like a really high quality one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
You could see that.
I definitely didn't enjoy it as much as I enjoyed Us and especially Get Out. I mean, I'd say I'd actually just go right down the list, A, B, and C-plus for those three movies.
Yeah. This is where me and some of my other Film Sack co-hosts kind of different. Like Ibbett goes, I didn't enjoy, whereas I would go, I probably enjoyed this one the most, but I recognize that the other films may be better.
Mm. Oh,
they may be more
saying.
Technically better films, but I enjoyed this more.
You know what? Fair enough. I think Get Out is like a forever classic that will be talked about for decades. Like Get Out is a special kind of movie, whereas this feels like, oh, sweet, that director made something fun and crazy and really enjoyable, but it's not going to be the impact, right? It's not going to be that like...
That definitely...
I think I agree with that.
I certainly was more gripped by the suspense of Get Out and Us
So here's our moment. If you are listening to this episode of Film Sack and the current year is 2033 or later, please let us know. Write us and remind us that we were trying to figure out how these films are going to age.
Yeah.
And we'd like
how
to,
did they we age? Would like I'd be very
remind
curious.
Us of that and find out.
Yeah. If I had to guess, I think Get Out will age the best. I think this one might be the best.
This might age better than Us.
Yeah, it might be thought of better, which is an age thing, I suppose.
And maybe more accessible, too, right?
I just don't know what he's doing next. I was trying to find out if there's any rumor about what Jordan Peele's up to.
He's doing
I can't find
Get Out. Us? Nope.
Us? Yep. Nope. Yep.
I couldn't find anything. There's not even rumors or anything. It's just blank.
The next one should be called No You.
No.
Exactly.
It was kind of interesting to call it Nope when he had all those other titles to call it that kept coming up.
He didn't get to call it Don't Look Up.
Yeah.
Was that an original idea for a title, or was that just,
I don't know,
because there was already a movie called Don't Look Up in 2021?
I have no idea. I just know watching this movie the first time, I'm like, wow, so much for Don't Look Up. Like that's just,
I am so glad he didn't, because I feel like Nope was just such a perfect.
It's a better title. Yeah.
It really drives audience engagement, because I didn't realize how many times in a movie like this that I do say Nope just out of.
Well, the characters did too. There were lots of Nopes. I recorded all of them, in fact.
Nope, 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 nope.
I was going to make a whole like medley.
Jump cut. Yeah.
Yeah, medley of Nopes, but instead we'll hear them in the order that they came is what we'll do today.
Right.
What grossed me out the most? Let's see if you guys can figure it out.
Gross.
What grossed me out? And there's a lot to be grossed out by, but it's, you know, a lot of practical effects and stuff. So you're going to have to think about this one, I think.
How do you feel about fist bumping a chimp whose hands are in blood?
Yeah. It's pretty rough. All right, you're in the zone. I mean, this isn't really fair because it's not an exact thing. To me, it's a thought. It's an idea of an enraged chimpanzee killing everybody.
Yeah, the sound that chimpanzee makes when he's taking out the woman whose feet you only see.
I mean,
to young Jupe, just imagine what the smell was like in that moment.
Like, death and poop.
And
torn lips.
Yeah. How come the dad hung around? I got a little confused about this. So
I was confused. Did he run upstairs? I'm assuming that since it's just a prop house.
Yeah, he should have stayed up there. Don't leave. Right.
But, you know, this chimpanzee monkey ape could definitely climb it, right?
Yeah, but he didn't know.
He just wanted to see if he could, you know, speak one of the actors who worked with him a lot, you know, could have calmed him down maybe.
Huge mistake. Like when he ran out there and then that ape ran around the side. That scares that kind of shit scares the shit out of me. Yeah. Freaking angry apes. Because you always hear, oh, they're so sweet. Little bonobo with his freaking, banana. And, oh, aren't these cute? And they're doing hand signals and stuff. You get one of those things worked up, and you always hear, oh, they're like 20 strong men's worth of strength or whatever. Yeah. Get the F out.
Ugh. And I don't ever see SNL doing a skit making fun of a moment where a bunch of kids died or where people
were. Right. Yeah.
You're not going to do it.
That was the... Man. I mean, that was a fun little add-on in this movie as showing along, because it's like, so as Jordan Peele has said repeatedly, the movie is about spectacle, and it's about how we treat spectacle and how we are sort of ruled by spectacle in a way. Right. And for these actors, like Jupe is a former actor, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And the rest of the cast are like people who are... They're adjacent to Hollywood, right? Like horse trainer and so on. The sister wants to be, she clearly wants to be an actor. Like for them to all have all of these memories of like an episode of Saturday Night Live or like, it just like, there's something about it that makes it feel real. Mm-hmm. It really which is weird because I'm talking about fake stuff.
Right.
You know?
Right.
And it's clever to do the Chris Kattan mention because he did the whole Mr. Peepers thing, which some people might Mandela effect into. Right, wait a minute. Was there really a Gordy's? And I remember Chris Kattan playing a monkey. And
My favorite Mr. Peepers is when Paw Peepers comes out. And that's the clip I sent you guys where The Rock comes in and does his dad. Oh, if you've never seen Mr. Peepers, normally we're talking about SNL skit with Chris Kattan. Where he's walking around like some kind of ape boy, and he's like eating apples and spitting them out at Will Ferrell and different.
What makes those skits work for me is Will Ferrell's straight man. Professor
trying
thing.
To keep.
It's so good.
Kattan was great as far as the physical comedy. One of the best, you know, SNL physical comedy comedians.
He's one of
and
those
I want
like
you to know, if you haven't if you haven't seen it, last year's episode starring Keke Palmer and SZA was the musical guest was probably the best of the year.
Really?
Probably the best episode this year.
She's wickedly talented. I did not know a thing about her before this movie, and I just was the whole time she's so good.
Her passion.
Just amazing.
Her passion is just amazing.
She just got energy to spare, and she pulls it all off somehow. And when she was scared, I believed it. When she wasn't scared, I wasn't, you know, I didn't, I believed it. It was just, she's amazing. Really good.
Was I supposed to laugh as much as I did when she finally delivered on why his name was OJ and she says run OJ run? Was I supposed to laugh at the idea of that, or is
I think you were
was it why I reading too much into it?
No, I think you were supposed to laugh at that. Sure.
Okay
Why not?
But again, it didn't ever cross a line. Like that's just this character's name. That's it. It's his name.
Yeah,
like it, you know what I mean? It doesn't, like, there's not a bigger message there.
Right
He's not even happy about it, but what's he going to do? That's the face that Daniel Kaluuya has on his face.
And Scott, have we talked about the animated series called Human Resources?
I've seen a bunch of it. They canceled it way too soon. That show's rad.
It was the spinoff of Big Mouth, right?
No. Oh, wait. Oh, I'm thinking of something else.
Is Steven Yeun doing voices in that work, too?
Keke Palmer is.
Keke Palmer does voice work. Okay.
Human Resources.
Sorry, that one's not canceled. I'm thinking of something else. Yeah. Anyway.
That is the
spinoff from Big Mouth, I guess. Mm-hmm. She play? We know the character that she plays.
Her character's named Rochelle.
I don't know who that is.
They're all monsters.
They're all monsters.
Yeah, they're all like literally puberty monsters, basically.
Yeah.
Now she, whatever she does next, I'm in. She blew my mind. I thought she was amazing. Yeah. And I think if I would have any criticism for this movie, they did critically underuse Barbie Ferreira, who's always good and everything.
Yeah, yeah. And if they could have found just a way to keep me Keith David just a little bit longer. And I'm assuming I couldn't quite tell. I need to go back and watch it again. I'm assuming that when he got that nickel back in through his eye and everything, he was trying to they were trying to make sure that he would stay conscious by naming the horses. Is that what he was doing? I believe.
Yeah,
I
like really talking him through. Yeah,
I liked how they chaptered up the movie too with the horses' names.
That was cool.
And I meant to go back and see how each of those tied into the actual horses and their backstories. They told a lot of the horses' backstories as well.
Lucky as hell.
Yeah, Lucky was lucky. Yeah, mm-hmm. yeah.
Yeah, that was Scott, truest name.
We're not entirely ghost is a ghost. We're not entirely sure what Keke Palmer's doing next, because we thought it was going to be a movie called Being Mortal, which is being made by Aziz Ansari. Mm. And Being Mortal is the movie that you heard about got shut down because someone had a sexual assault complaint toward Bill Murray of all people.
Oh, that's the movie. Oh shit. Yeah. Oh, that's right.
So how many did we see? Usually, isn't that our modern point system now? It's like if there's one complaint, we all go right. if there's two, we kind of go maybe. If there's three or more, you go okay, you big turd.
I think that there's more too. Like if we can kind of say, oh yeah, I kind of suspected that guy, then we'll agree on the very first. The very first one's like
Bill Murray is always a sarcastic, over the top asshole, but you know, you kind of love him.
Yeah,
we have not gotten anything except that production was shut down on that thing.
Right.
That's all we know. Bill Murray's 72.
Yeah, all like these weird. All these people who were kind of jerks when they were younger, like that they slowly either morphed into complete jerk. Like we all hear how hard Chevy Chase is to work with.
Yeah,
and you know, it's like I felt like Chevy Chase and Bill Murray kind of had like similar dispositions earlier in their careers.
They fought
and
I'm each like, other. They hate like, each other.
I don't give a crap kind of
So did Bill Murray, he seemed to be tracking on the kinder side, but you know, once you get to be 70, you know, I don't know how I'm gonna be when I be 70.
Look, Brian, if you're 70 and you start grabbing people's boobs on a film set, we'll let you know.
Still wrong. Don't get me wrong, it's still wrong. It's just like, how disconnected are you once you get to be 70 from the rest of reality and stuff, you know? It's like,
yeah,
well, I don't know. I mean, I think he's, as far as I know, has got all his faculties. If he did this shit,
how many nickels
to
the head did he take over the years? I don't
nobody wants you know, to
not,
hear
not nope, excusing any behavior nope,
nobody wants to hear that Bill Murray does some dark shit, but if he did
I'm never making excuses for these kind of people. If that's your thinking, I'm just trying to think, how can I avoid being that? Is it something that happens with the decaying faculties, or is it something that I can control? Like, I'm not an a-hole on the inside.
Usually power dynamics is my experience.
Right.
That's the concern, yeah.
Right.
If you're in a position of power, whatever position that is, and you behave poorly, it's usually because of that, because you thought you were safe. Everybody loves you. Like, if it's Bill Murray did whatever he did, you got a life of everybody going, Bill Murray, he's great, isn't he? He's like one of us. Oh, he's so great. Right. I love him and this and this. And, well, what does that do? That gives you a buffer.
Right.
And with great power comes great responsibility and all that.
Right.
You know?
I often question also, it's like, how many times do I have to hear Tom Hanks is bad before I'll flip on him? That's going to be a long time.
that's the other factor.
He's got a lot of goodwill. A lot of goodwill in my heart. So,
it's less about how many, just as a general rule, two strikes and they're out. Right. Tom Hanks has earned several credits and let's see if he runs out of them at some point.
Yeah. Also, nothing I've heard on that has been anything more than.
Right.
Just,
I've never heard anything.
Oh, there's all kinds of stuff.
Look, it doesn't matter how good you are in this life. Someone always suspects you're a dick. So, I mean,
Yeah.
I really want to tell you about one more upcoming project.
Yes, please. Get back to the topic.
Remember the writer-director David O. Russell? Three Kings, Silver Linings Playbook.
American Hustle.
Yep. I Heart Huckabees. David O. Russell is working on a film called Super Toys. It's set in the 70s. And it's about these two toy sales reps who are married.
Great.
And the woman is Keke Palmer, and the husband is played by Sacha Baron Cohen.
Yeah. Oh, wow.
That sounds good. I'm down with this.
Bring it. Bring it. I'm down with that. That sounds great. Huh. All right. Let's take a look at some of this trivia here. According to Jordan Peele, Kiki Palmer's introductory scene, in which the character Emerald, who she plays, delivers her energetic and fast-talking monologue about her family's history, took 14 takes to shoot.
Oh, I doubt it.
He claims that all of them were wildly different, and it sounds like they may have edited two or three together. It wasn't because she was screwing it up. It was like
It is a complex, high energy, and that's hard to do when you're doing high energy, right?
It makes me think that there is some that are even more high energy than the one that they used, right? Like, hey, do you all remember the guy Edward Muybridge, and he invented the film, and blah blah blah.
Yeah,
the take they took, the one they used, was pretty darn good. I can imagine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Jordan Peele cites King Kong from 1933, Jurassic Park, Close Encounters of the Third Kind, Signs, and Wizards of Oz as influences for this film.
I got a very big Signs vibe.
Big time Signs. Yeah. Signs is still one of my favorite Shyamalan.
Oh yeah, that's not necessarily. And once again, that's one of those. It's like, is it objectively the best of Shyamalan? Probably not. But is it the most enjoyable for me? Agree. Mm-hmm. Yes, for me.
Right. I still put Unbreakable at the top of both of those lists.
Oh yeah, Unbreakable's better.
Unbreakable for me, my favorite.
Unbreakable is below Signs and The Village, and that's just like shows you when a filmmaker does sort of kind of the same thing. Not there again. Jordan Peele is not doing the same thing every movie, but you know, it's their work, you know,
right?
Like audiences can really take away different different feelings from it.
Sure. I didn't know this. One of the lead roles was offered to Jesse Plemons. It was most likely Jupiter Angel, but he turned it down due to scheduling conflicts with Killers of the Flower Moon movie he was making.
That would have been good, though. That would have been good spot in there.
I could see him more as Jupe, as kind of like the child star turned shyster.
I could see that.
I could see him. Either one.
Yeah, probably. Steven Yeun did really good, though. I really liked his. He was really good also at being
really good.
At doing the thing that we're looking, you could almost have named this movie Don't Look Away, because I mean, that's what they did a lot. There was a lot of longing shots and just, you know, before acting.
Scott, I just want you to know that Killers of the Flower Moon is this very soon upcoming Martin Scorsese movie that also stars Leonardo DiCaprio and Robert De Niro. Yeah. So you don't turn that down.
Yeah, no, you don't turn that down.
The Scorsese's greatest hits. Look at that.
Yeah, this actually got an incredible cast. And it's also supposed to be 4 hours long. It'll be his longest film of his career.
Oh, jeez.
Which I don't know how I feel about that. But I love Scorsese, so I'm not going to not watch it. I'm going to watch it. But I might have to do it in 2 nights.
Yeah, exactly. I split Irishman up into 2 nights, and this will.
That was the right thing to do.
It's the thing that Brendan Fraser was referring to about when he said, "You know, like I'm so happy to sort of be back, and I got a really great things upcoming." He's in this movie.
Yeah,
cool.
There's someone else like really famous in the movie. I'm forgetting who it is.
Yeah, there's a bunch of big names. They all look. I can't wait.
John Lithgow is in this Scorsese film, which I can't wait.
Oh, yes, my gosh. I watched a documentary that was nothing to do with John Lithgow, but the guy from the FBI that's in this documentary that kept doing commentary, if I was looking away, you'd swear it was John Lithgow talking, and it drove me crazy. I couldn't focus on the point of the documentary because it was like listening to, you know, Third Rock from the Sun talk to me every five minutes.
Right.
That's funny.
So weird.
Oh, man. I can't stop thinking, by the way, about you telling us earlier that Kiki Palmer did that high energy improv moment of describing her family's history, because I'm going through the scene in my head and there's a part where she's talking about it and she says, my great, great grandpa, and Daniel Kaluuya breaks in and says, great. And oh, my God, I feel like if she had been saying great, 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 and then she missed it and he interjected with that, how would you not laugh?
No kidding.
during that scene, if that wasn't.
It's hard to say. It actually built the characters better, though. Even if it was that, it was good to keep it in because it established him as kind of this grounded, no nonsense. I don't want this bullshit. Yeah. You know, he just wants to get the job done. Where she's like, let's really sell this. Let's really go crazy here. And what a fun relationship. I really, really like that about it.
And there's a bunch of people on that set too. and they're all kind of reacting in the moment. Yeah. And it just, it felt so realistic. And I know it's very highly stylized and so on, but like Eddie Jemison is in there. I love that guy. Mm. And it's just like all they're doing is standing around and reacting. And it just like, it really sold it for me. This, that this is a, you know, that this is kind of a serious story about this character, OJ.
Yeah. It's funny that her relationship with her dad, they didn't really get into it too much, but her relationship with him was a little bit strained.
Right.
And ironically, they were easily the most like each other. Like
That's usually what happened.
Yeah. Keith David's whiz bang. Hey, we got this awesome horse place and he's always selling. Yeah. And then she comes in, she's very similar, but that's true. A lot of times parents and kids that are similar, they bonk heads.
Yeah.
The closer they are to each other.
Do they mention anything about the mom?
No.
I was trying to remember.
See a photograph on the wall, I think, and that's about it, right?
Yeah, something from the 70s. Yeah.
Not important
something.
To the story, but I was just curious. I just thought maybe I missed it. Mm-hmm.
She would look at it occasionally, and it felt like that was meaningful for her to do that. But other than that, they didn't really get into it. But I like that.
It was above the magical record player that still plays, even though there shouldn't be any power to the speakers.
And the, it was wild.
So Jordan Peele has said that his favorite horror director of all time is John Carpenter. Fair enough, right? You can see a lot of his influence in this. And that's great because Keith David was in The Thing and They Live. And that might that must have been a really cool thing for him to have like this old Carpenter regular and you know plus it's freaking Keith David, man. I mean that guy
Keith David. Oh God,
I
hate to see him die. It was a phenomenal death scene.
I
loved it. Him riding, kind of like you know, taking off on that horse very slowly and just falling off. That was just
so when they explained it. When the authorities explained it away as the news or whatever as bits falling from an airplane.
Yeah,
like people's luggage or something. Did that wouldn't have been enough for me. It would have been like, wait a minute. There are keys embedded in things. There are.
Right.
I would have been more questioning about that, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. And that's, you know, that's how it is. Right.
If I looked up and I got a coin in my eye and went all the way into my brain, I would want answers. Right. I would want more.
Yeah.
You know, like when was that plane overhead? What was the plane? What was the itinerary? What airline was like, I'd want to know a lot more.
Yeah. I feel like somebody's driver's license should have gotten shout out by the alien too.
Right? Lots of driver's licenses.
Lots of driver's licenses.
I'm assuming the alien just couldn't eat metal.
Digest metal.
That was only the metal that seemed
paper
to drop
down. And cards and stuff like that were okay. Right.
Yeah.
And not just at terminal velocity. This stuff was coming out at the alien shits. I mean, it was the alien shits.
Yeah.
Did we see the? I know we saw the wheelchair. Do we see the IC machine, or did the IC machine not get sucked?
I don't recall it. It was still there
when he came back and was walking.
Okay. Yeah. It was still there. All right.
But I noticed it too because I was like, "What the hell is cactus flavor?" I need to know.
Right. I want some now.
Right. Yeah.
It tastes like green.
They had two of them. They had one was like a space one, like Skyberry, I think.
Oh, yeah.
Two of them were cactus, and one was just like, I don't know, strawberry or something boring. But I hate when I notice stuff like that. Speaking of all those people that got sucked in there, here's your total body count for the film. 43 humans, at least. Okay. There may have been more. Mm-hmm. 12 horses, 2 on screen, 10 implied, and a monkey. That's body count. Or an ape, I guess. I keep saying monkey.
Did we ever...
Yeah.
Now I'm trying to recall. Oh God, now I'm starting to forget stuff. Just see, I'm going to be in trouble when I get to be 70. I can't even remember if Scott told us what grossed him out the most.
Oh no, you're going to grab my boobs. Yes, I did already, but that's okay.
The sound of the chimpanzee.
I thought you were saying that. Okay, but that was okay. And then Scott agreed. Okay, because I was looking through my notes and the thing that I had predicted was the horse poop with the note in it, and he picked it up. Okay. But,
I
just forgot it.
The invitation to come to the family show.
No, that was two or three in the list, but the problem there was he's an old ranch hand. He gets it. He's wearing gloves.
Right.
Like, that's fine. And horse poo is what? It's just like.
It's so dry hay.
It's barely poo. Yeah, it's barely poo.
It's barely poo. You ever really smell it, though? It don't just.
It breaks up like poo.
Yeah.
This is our second movie in a row, by the way, with somebody yelling, "It's in the cloud." As we get. Right? Creed. Yeah, you know, telling Sylvester Stallone that even if he breaks his phone, it's still in the cloud. And we get Keke Palmer yelling, "It's in the cloud!"
You know what's crazy is that cloud not moving when the windy day happened.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's genuinely freaky as hell.
That was freaky. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Just the idea of seeing that. They portrayed that really well. When that thing was barely worming through clouds and we didn't know what it was yet, that's super effective.
Like, oh, you know, we haven't talked about too is the special filming that they did for this, that the night scenes were actually shot during the day with a special treatment to the film to make it look like night.
It's like they did they did that in Fury Road. Same
deal. They did a good job though.
It looked good.
Sometimes they don't do, but this time was good.
Yeah. I think I liked it in Fury Road, but the problem with Fury Road's night scenes were, if you thought about it a little too hard, you could tell that every time Mad Max would look in the sky or Furiosa or somebody, they were squinting. And you're like, why are they squinting in the night? Like, what's that about? they filmed it during the day.
This movie also had one of my favorite deadpan readings of a song lyric in it. Like, I love that shit. I mean, watch Dante's Peak. It's like, row, 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 that kind of stuff. Yeah, oh, they did the Flying Purple People Eater. Mm-hmm. Oh, having Wincott read that slow and dry. Loved it.
Well, and that's along the way to his certain death. You know that Antlers Holst is going to die, and you know that because every time you see him before that, he's sitting at home watching these terrible clips of like animals
to the death.
Eating other animals.
Yeah, and you just know, oh, he's going to end up getting eaten.
Yeah, it's like his wet dream to fight the monster. Is he going to be the aggressor or the victim? It was interesting.
I really didn't know where they were going with his character, because when he was looking at footage of like animals dying and eating each other and all that, I just thought, I don't know, I can't stop coughing.
It's the worst documentaries ever.
Right.
Yeah.
I wish it had been the Circle of Life lyrics instead of the Purple People. That would have been maybe better.
I recorded it, but I can't remember what the song was that got all slow and weird when the thing was shitting all over the house.
Sunglasses at Night.
Sunglasses at Night, dude. That song took on the most sinister quality. I'm never going to hear it the same again, ever.
Yeah.
Again, that's not how that works either.
If there's not enough power to make the tape play full speed, is there enough power to make the speakers work?
Was he using a tape? Did those vans even have tapes? That was also another thing.
Oh, that's really a good point. Yeah, the technology. It would have to be a cassette for that to
right.
Like the phones that. Did it too. So the cell phones cut out in the same exact way. Everything cut out in that like, which I like as an effect, but it doesn't feel very realistic unless it's some alien thing. Right. Maybe
right. They did it. They did it. Peele seems to have said, OK, I want this to be timeless. So he went with technology that was already established and, is still around in different places like the vinyl.
The vinyl record worked well. Yeah.
You know, what was another really great touch? Speaking of technology, is that Daniel Kaluuya is using a freaking razor or some shit.
Yeah. That's
everyone else is using modern cell phone, smartphones. He's using some old ass razor because he's just like, I ain't need no new shit. I'm just going to do very,
That's what I find typically around here as well. A lot of guys that I know around here that are, work kind of like a lot of manual labor. It's like, if I break one more darn phone, whereas those stupid, old school flip phone types and stuff, those things are indestructible.
And, they take a beating, dude. Still. I don't think turning them sideways and trying to get video out of them, bad call.
Yeah, that would be pointless.
And there's a certain kind of person who not only doesn't need TikTok in their life, but they're like shun it actively.
He's one. No, he's a troglodyte in that way. It's like, troglodyte. What's the word?
Luddite.
Troglodyte is not. Troglodyte's like a caveman. I prefer troglodyte.
If you just take trog off it, you get Luddite.
Right.
I don't know why I said troglodyte.
We should watch trog.
A trog.
Yeah. Is trog a movie? Is that a thing? It sounds like a movie, doesn't
it's
it?
It's totally,
the Troma version of Tron.
Oh, man. Just a bunch of cavemen running around.
No, it's a movie. Of course it's a movie. It's an old 70s movie that I've probably seen more times than you guys.
Wow. And it's actually called Trog.
It's called Trog. Yeah.
If you've seen it once.
Was it a Mystery Science Theater movie where it first got turned? I can't remember.
If you've seen it once, you've seen it more than the rest of us, because I've never heard of it.
Joan Crawford.
Yeah.
Oh, it was her last film.
Oh,
no. Another last film curse.
Yeah.
Oh. Well, she'll join Raul Julia for some tea when she gets to heaven.
That's right.
Or they already
knew. You were in what? Trog?
Yeah. I thought Street Fighter was bad anyway. Right. Hey guys, I want to talk to you about Maeve, our brand new sponsor friends, Maeve. And the reason I'm so excited about this one is Maeve has made something I've never seen my dog get so excited about anything like this before in her life. Ripley, in particular, we gave her a big fresh bowl of Maeve dog food, and she'd lost her mind in a good way. I don't think she's ever eaten that well. I mean, did you know that a dog eating kibble every day is like a human consuming a diet of like 100% processed foods? No offense to anyone who's doing that, but no matter your species, right? Fillers, additives, synthetics, they're not optimal for your nutrition. So that's where Maeve Raw Food for Dogs comes in. Formulated by a PhD, veterinary nutritionist with real human-grade ingredients, by the way. You can name these things by looking at them. You look at it and go, well, that's a blueberry. I know a blueberry when I see it. Plus, it's bite-sized and ready for your dog to eat right out of the bag. No mess, no prep. Just open, pour, and enjoy. And boy, howdy, did she enjoy it. I'm not sure what she expected. Obviously, you can't really communicate this stuff to your dog before you get it. But I poured it into the bowl. We did it frozen, which you can do. And she now looks at us with a different eye. I think she might love us again. But, you know, if you could talk to your dog, don't you wish you could? Maybe you'd ask them how their day was. Tell them you love them, that sort of thing. Well, if you really love them, then give them to Maeve Dog Food. And they'll feel the communication through that. Longevity, whole body health, happy, happy dogs. I love my dogs, and I love how they went straight to this. They're kind of picky eaters, too, by the way. Kind of on and off. It's like, do I want this today? Kind of no. Maybe we need to switch it up. That was a bit of a problem. What I like best about Maeve is it just seemed like, bam, they were in. They're all in. And you can tell what you're feeding them is good just by looking at it. Everybody with a dog should try Maeve. Those are just a few of the reasons that Ripley and Rainer and I love Maeve. And you can get $40 off your first order at meetmaeve.com. That's meetmaeve.com/filmsack. Get in there. Get that done. They support benefits you can smell, feel, and see. Most dogs, parents see results within 28 days or less. I'm already seeing results. There's no mess, no prep, no thawing. Just open, pour, and serve. It's that easy. People love Maeve. They have over 1,000 five-star reviews. So do their dogs, especially those with notorious picky eaters. All right, so get in there, get this done. Make the switch to Raw today, right now. Once again, Maeve is offering $40 off your first order at meetmaeve.com/filmsack. Go to meetmaeve.com/filmsack. That's MEETMAEV. All right, meetmaeve.com/filmsack to receive $40 off your first order. Once again, that is meetmaeve.com/filmsack. I love it when the weather starts to warm up. That's happening here, even in the Rocky Mountains. It actually happens. Getting out in the yard, digging in my garden. It's one of my favorite parts of spring. The Sunday lawn care makes it easy. Well, easier than ever to enjoy. And if you're like me and you love the springtime, you don't want to figure out how to take care of your own yard, though. I'm terrible at that stuff. Terrible at it. You know? Do you know where to start? You're like in the store, the local place going, I don't know what to put on my lawn. Well, that's where lawn care comes in from Sunday. Oh, man. So here's the deal. Just yesterday, we decided to go out and do our Sunday lawn care treatment because we finally got the weather we want. And it was so easy. It just showed up in the format we needed it. It's a bag. You open it up, this particular treatment. You stick it on the end of our hose. Comes with an attachment. So you don't have to do anything. You just go outside and spray. And it's not like you're spraying a bunch of weird toxic fumes all over the neighborhood, made from who knows what chemicals. Natural ingredients. All right? And I can take that one thing off my to-do list. I don't have to worry about that anymore. Oh, man. Sunday is everything you need to get the lawn you've always dreamed of. This spring, go to sunday.com/filmsack20 and enter your address to get a customized plan created just for your lawn. I just love the ease of use. Kim and I had a fun time hanging out there together. I did some raking. She did the spraying. We both commented how nice it was not to worry about our shoes getting covered with something we don't trust. And tracking it in the house or having the dogs get a hold of it or something like that. Anyway, so easy. We've done weed control. We've done seed control. We've done pest control. All of those processes were super simple and easy. And it's made us much more serious about our lawn care because we don't have to worry about this bit. It just happens. And we're looking forward to our very green lawn. It happened last year with Sunday. It's going to happen again this year. No trips to the store hauling heavy bags since they ship straight to your home. And you're just a hose away from applying Sunday to your lawn. You can fertilize your whole lawn in less time than it takes to watch an episode of your favorite TV show. Truth. And they only use ingredients you can feel good about. No harsh chemicals, no long waiting periods. We're trying to keep your kids and pets off the lawn. Simply apply, let it dry, and you're back to enjoying your yard. Sunday is easy and it's affordable. Some lawn care services cost more than $1,500 a year. But Sunday's full season plan started just $109. Jeez, why wouldn't you do this? Sunday's offering our listeners 20% off. Full season plans start at just $109, and you can get 20% off when you visit getsunday.com/filmsack. That's getsunday.com/filmsack today. Do you guys want to do some clips, or do you have anything else you'd like to add to this before we do?
Nope.
I've covered all mine.
Nope. I get it. I get what you did. All right, well, let's get to it. Here is some clips from the film. Let's start with this one. It's the first use of the title of the film.
Nope.
All right, she was the first one. There's more, so stick around. Steven Yeun says things.
So, same deal, yeah? 11-5?
Same deal, yeah? I do that a lot. I put yeah at the end of questions. Mm-hmm. I don't know why I do that.
Yep. Here's, find your horses to feed them to Space Sphincter? Sure.
Sure. Yeah. Let's get
it. It's a lot of money to just throw away on a show. Like, how much are the people paying to get into that show that justifies the cost of the horse you're sacrificing?
Right. Yeah. Now, here's something that always freaks me out. There's something about far off, echoing, amplified voices in the desert. I can't explain it, but it's when he was just listening to Steven Yeun's thing from a distance, and here's what it sounded like. What if I told you?
Every Friday, for the last six months.
Something about that, dude.
Yeah. I don't want to say amplified, but it's heightened by the glowing lights that are all in pairs, so they all look like eyes staring back at OJ. Yeah.
That's that Close Encounters bullshit right there. That's the stuff that's leaking in from that, right?
Yeah, it's a lot. Here's some brother-sister chatter.
Oh, read it.
You read it, dyslexic ass.
You read it, dyslexic ass. She is a feisty one for sure. Fries was always like this for me, and I mean it when I say that. When I would go in there, this is what it felt like.
Thank you for shopping at Fries. Did you guys find everything you're looking for today?
Yes.
It's just that feeling.
Yes. Because she knows it. She knows it's coming. If you've ever been to Fries or back, you know it's coming.
Oh, yeah. They're about to get upsells.
Upsells.
Yeah, you want to buy that? You want to add this? You want to sign up for this? Ugh. GameSpot.
I love how he's like berates them. I mean, that is such an experience at Fry's. It's like, yep. Well, you won't be able to.
here's a tech support person. No, I wrote here.
Would you like one of our tech support personnel to help you with the installation?
No.
There you go. I like that.
Awesome.
No. The Fry's guy explains aliens. I really liked him.
They're f-ing world killers, planetary destroyers, and that means that they've been f-ing watching us. In studying us, waiting for the perfect time to beam us up and shove metal probes up our f***ing asses.
Cool.
I really see again. Like, I don't always like the group of survivors that's together at the end.
Yeah,
I don't always like the interactions or whatever puzzle piece they are in the big picture. But I thought everybody in this fit so nicely and shouldn't have, but kind of did. Wincott's character did. He did. The brother sister thing really worked for me. Like, I don't know, that to me is the strength of the movie. Yeah. Everything else
it was really important because there was a moment in time in the film where they're outside, they're exited the area, and so they've got to muster the courage or whatever they need to get back into the fight. And they explored that for a little bit, and I thought that was fun.
It was pretty good. Here's a nope number two.
Nope.
All right.
Nope number two.
Oh, look, we already have nope number three.
Nope.
That was him again. we got, what's this? Oh, he gets scared by Barbie, what's her name? And it goes like this.
Shit.
That was pretty good. Yeah. It was a good
with
scare.
The Cheetos.
Yeah, with the Cheetos.
Flaming hot Cheetos.
What's this?
Who this?
Oh, who dis?
That's tremendous, Scott.
Who dis?
Who dis?
That clip.
Who dis?
You're going to be able to use that every
exactly.
time you bring a listener on to TMS.
That's yeah, true, say, yeah.
Hi, who dis?
Who dis?
Let's see. She's going to eat him.
Haven't seen one of those in a minute.
Pray, man. Just that mother pray I don't ever see him, because if I do, I'm going to eat him.
Eat him.
I do love that giant praying mantis on the camera.
Yeah, just hanging out up there for too long.
Yeah. Little like bastard. So many jump scares before you even get the actual
big bad. Yeah. They really split that up, because once you get into the actual horror of it, there's not really any jump scares because it's all real slow. But they gave us the jump scares up front. I liked it.
I liked it too. Could listen to him talk all day. I wrote,
I remember you and your brother. We have French fried taters.
He's the Hollywood guy who's seen too much, and he's become an old philosopher. Yeah. What drug is he on? That's what I want to know.
I know. The angel looked at him and was like, what are you doing over there? He's a Film Sack regular, so sort of. We did The Crow. He was the bad guy in The Crow. He was,
just recently, like this past year, we watched where he was the bad guy at the Strange Days.
Strange Days. Exactly. There it is.
Yeah. I mean, this is the one of the only times I can think of that he plays a good guy.
Yeah,
because he's got the voice and the look to always be the bad guy. And,
he's typecast in a lot of ways, but in almost everything. I'm trying to think of something I've seen him in where he isn't that.
I'm pretty sure he was a serial killer up until this point. So I'm going to still.
You still think he's a bad guy? He decided making analog cameras was his future after a bunch of
his
murders.
His interest aligned here, I think, is just what happened, I think.
Sure.
Yeah.
Here is a clip I called Cool Sound Work.
It's an animal. It's territorial. And it thinks that this is its home.
See, I think that's badass. That's cool. Even though I don't think it works that way, I think it's cool.
No, of course not.
Yeah.
Here's your fourth nope.
Park your brain.
Nope.
There's another nope.
Nope.
Did we ever get a nope out of Steven Yeun, or was it all just
no Steven Yeun nopes Emerald that I'm aware of? I'm pretty sure it was
because Jupe embraces the whole thing.
Yeah, he says yep.
Gotcha.
Yeah, he says
so. He's our yep to the nopes.
He's the yep to the nope. he needed therapy is what he needed. I don't know why he got me. All right, here's I'll never think of this song the same again. It's your sunglasses song. Here you go. Really weird.
It's so disconcerting. Awesome. And
it made me not want to ever hear it again.
Nah, not me. I'm gonna fire it up again one more time.
We heard this at the top of the show.
There's a wheelchair on your roof.
Sure as hell is. And they don't like wheelchairs, that's right. I was trying to remember the reference earlier. Anyway, here's the don't eat me.
I said, Mr. Purple People Eater, don't eat me. Need me.
He was also really good on Westworld as Old Bill. And it was a tiny, tiny role. Yeah. He was a prototype model of one of the early robots, and he was kind of herky jerky and stuff. And he sat and talked to Anthony Hopkins for like 10 minutes, and that's all we ever got. But man, wow. One of my favorite things ever about that show was that moment. Anyway, let's move on to this. The Film Sack checklist goes like this. The world's greatest defunct Fry's electronics commercial. Check. Yep. cactus flavored icy sounds gross. Check. And finally, retroactively give Kiki Howard an award. Can we do that?
Palmer.
What did I say? Howard?
Howard.
Yeah, that's fine.
I meant Palmer.
You're good.
How come I did
Howard? Yes, retroactively give her an award. She, again, I think she could have gotten nominated for an Oscar for this.
I do too. She was really
just,
good.
Mm-hmm. I guess this movie, there's just something about it. It didn't resonate with the Oscars.
That makes two people that should have gotten Oscar nominations that didn't. Her and the younger girl on Everything Everywhere All at Once, she should have gotten.
No, she did. She did. She was
she nominated?
Almost won the Oscar.
Yeah, she got nominated, did not get the
Oscar. Oh, I thought she didn't get nominated. She should have won.
She went to every award show, Scott, and watched her co-star win her award.
Look, I'm a real big fan of who won, but I would really like her to have won. I think she deserved it more.
Other thing about this movie is the visual effects. Like, Nope really deserved more awards. for visual effects. There's like not a feature lot design. Of movies last year that you know are in this category. Mm-hmm. If you look at FilmSack, by the way, if you look at the producers of Nope, none of them have ever been on a FilmSack movie before, except one, right. And that's the visual effects producer, Mike Chambers. I'm going to dare any of you to name one of the four previous FilmSack movies that had the visual effects by Mike Chambers that we have seen.
The last,
I'd just never in a million years be able to pull it.
No idea. Yeah, no idea.
Monster design, I give props to, because I will probably remember that spaceship. The whole thing for a while. You won't be able to have a spaceship with a hole in the bottom of it. We're not thinking of Nope.
Yeah, that's true.
So it goes fully organic, and then to have this perfect square as its as its thing in Jellyfish Mode.
That exact effect doesn't jellyfish remind you of mode. Any movies we've seen.
I just like the term Jellyfish Mode a lot.
That's jellyfish great. Mode, mode. Yeah. It's awesome. Yep.
Yeah, you bonk it three times and it turns into a jellyfish, and then you have to.
But it did feel like a movie steeped in practical effects, even though I know there was CG, but it felt practical and useful, and I don't know, I respect that. I also thought the use of those what are they called at car lots?
The wacky inflatable tube. Arm waving.
Yeah, the idea of putting those everywhere as an indicator of where the electricity is being killed. Cool idea. Great idea.
Randy, tell us the other movies that
you had a point.
I wouldn't expect you to have guessed like True Lies or Day After Tomorrow, which he was the visual effects producer on. But this movie's visual effects looks a lot like his masterpiece. Mike Chambers was the visual effects producer for Inception.
Mm. Oh, really?
And, it's just like there's just things about it that it just you can just feel.
Mm. Well, he was a good hire then. Let's say that.
Yeah.
Let's move on to the Star Trek connections. There's got to be. Tell me, Wincott or somebody.
I wish Michael Wincott had ever been in Star Trek, and I don't get it. Mm. Like even right this minute, he would have been amazing in a couple of different roles in Picard.
Yeah, you can do it now. So get back in there. But get her done.
We do have one. There is one connection. There's an actor named Oz Perkins who has a bit role in this movie. He's, I think, one of the people who are on the set, or I don't know.
Yeah, like the early on parts where she's doing her speech. Yeah.
And
on the set. Okay.
Yeah, that's it.
And Oz Perkins was in Lens Flare Abrams Star Trek 2009.
Mm. Oh, okay.
He was, his cast role, his role was kind of titled Enterprise Communications Officer.
Mm. Okay.
Well, sure. Okay. So he was there. So we got a connection. But that's it.
Something
that's
familiar it. About that good dude. Where do I know him from? Oh.
No.
Oh, the Utah Murder Project. That's what I know him from. Back in the early aughts, there was a movie called the Utah Murder Project, and I don't even know why I saw it, but he was a detective. That's why he's familiar.
Interesting. All
right. Well done. Let's get to the soundtrack grade. I've given a GAA for grade all around. I really like the use of old stuff and new stuff. And the score was good. It was all good.
Great. And apparently, if we're watching a Jordan Peele movie, we're listening to Michael Abels. Mm-hmm. He is basically new as a composer. He was one of these guys who was out there making ambient music, and Jordan Peele got him in on Us as his first ever composer credit. Mm-hmm. Okay. And then he has since scored every Jordan Peele movie, and he's gotten other work, like studio stuff, like See You Yesterday and Bad Education and All Day and Night. This is like movies that are made by Netflix studios or HBO studios. And so he's kind of up and coming. He's middle aged, so he's not that young, but
sure.
Michael Abels.
Nice. Cool. May he ever reign. let's get to the Twitter post. This is where you guys sum it up in 280 characters or less. And I think this time we'll start with Randy just to change things up.
Nope. A man in a cowboy hat. Another man in a cowboy hat, a man with a camera, several horses, and exactly one woman who's trying to not make eye contact, just like a Saturday night at Ibbot's.
Oh, yeah. That's perfect. Speaking of which, well, we can't get to him yet. Dunaway, it's your turn.
Oh, is it me? Oh, yeah. I'm here. Oh, hi. Nope. Like getting your rips lipped off. Wait, I'm starting again.
Your
nope.
Rips.
Like getting your lips ripped off by a monkey ape chimp. You're going to see that and go, oh, hashtag cuss, no lips.
is that how you pronounce nope with no lips?
Yeah, I tried. Yeah. I did it several times. Like, you can't really say. Well, I guess you could say out.
We need these things. Nope. These lips are important. It turns out.
Yeah.
These lips were made for talking. That's just what they'll
do.
That
would be note, wouldn't it? Be note.
Mm. Yeah.
Dang it. Nope.
Finally, Brian Ibbett.
Nope.
1, 2, 3, 4. Tell the people what she wore. She wore an itsy bitsy, teeny weeny, yellow polka dot bikini.
Wow.
Nice. Nope.
Nope.
Amazing. Deep, dark, Wincott energy there. I like that a lot. All right. Well, this is another thing that we just got handed. This movie was almost called Thank You, But No. The second one, runner-up, was pretty good, too. Most Likely Not, but they went with Nope. So it's fine. Right.
Most Likely Not.
Quick text we got from some listeners, 801-471-0462. This is from Chris D., and he says, dear FilmSack, as a Canadian, please never again bring up the glowing puck. This is a national shame that should have never happened, and we won't teach that shameful part of our history. It's a black puck on white ice, people. Chris D.
hilarious.
Yeah, nobody likes that glowy puck thing that happened for
It was such a, there was not even really controversy. It just was universally hated.
Yeah, no one liked it. I know what they were trying to do, but
it
just didn't work out.
My favorite thing about it is that it had a like registered name. It's called Fox Tracks.
Mm. Okay.
And not Fox Track, Fox Tracks.
Tracks,
Fox
like track, following a track, yeah, fox with an X. In the snow sort of thing.
Nice. And no one wants to say that. No one is willing to say Fox Tracks.
No. Huh. Plus, you had to pay whoever had the – that's like the NFL thing. Someone gets royalties every time they do a fake first down line. That's a tech that's not copyrighted, trademarked or something or whatever. Someone owns the rights to the tech or patent. So you have to pay
credit to the person who thought that was a good idea.
For sure. Because that works. That.
Yeah.
That works really well. Yeah.
Yeah. The ones where it's under their feet and it looks like it's part of the field and all that. It's pretty cool. Let's move on to this one from Kay Smith, who says, hello, Sackers. Earlier today, I watched the 1983 TV movie Starship One on Amazon Prime. Oh. It stars Hal Linden and Lee Majors, and it's about a supersonic plane that gets stuck in space.
What?
It's a bad movie with lots of tropes and bad special effects, so I recommend it highly for a sacking. Love the show, Kay Smith. I would check that out.
Starship One, like the number one?
Yeah, no, like the spelled out one. Well, that's what he wrote. I don't know if that's right.
There was a video game, too. Wait, what?
TV movie. Let me look this up. It is just one spelled O-N-E.
Okay, because Starship, the number one, is a Atari game. So we got Starship
One. Oh, wait a minute. Ship One. This is a wrong movie, though.
Yeah, am I reading it wrong? What did you say? What did she say again? Spaceship One?
I don't know why you called him a she, Starship. But that's fine. It is.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Starship. Starship One is the name of the movie as written in this email or this text, but I don't know if that's actually correct because I can't find it. I found one that's from 2018, but that's not it.
This is once again proof that we don't screen these stuff before the show recording.
Right.
No, we do that on purpose.
Just go for it.
Yeah, we get more content that way. I like doing it that way. All right. Well, if that's a thing that can be viewed, it sounds like an amazing thing, and we should watch
it. And the person said Lee Majors, right? What would they say?
Lee Majors and Hal Linden.
And Hal Linden.
Yeah.
My God.
I want to see it. They got me peaked here, but I don't see it anywhere. So we'll see what we can find.
I'm doing a deeper dive search. Starflight.
Starflight.
The plane.
That Starflight.
Couldn't land. The plane Starflight.
Yeah. Or also known as Starflight One. Or Airport 85. Interesting television.
Really? So it just basically they have to keep refueling this thing until they figure out how to land it?
1983, there it is. Yeah. Okay, so Starflight, the plane that couldn't land, is the full title.
Yeah.
Oh, man. We need to watch this.
I think so, yeah.
Hal Linden. Look at him. Look at him.
Look at him. Take a gosh darn look at him.
I think I remember this, actually.
Wait Lauren a Hutton.
I'm having flashbacks.
I don't have any memory
of the trauma of my childhood.
Tess Harper. All right, I'm in. We got to watch this. I watched
all kinds of ABC Sunday night movies during this time period, so I'm pretty sure I've probably seen this.
Yeah. Well, if Prime has it, why are we even not doing it? We have to do it.
Starflight. Okay.
Starflight. Okay. If you want to send us messages, do 801-471-0462, or you can email us filmsack@gmail.com. In the meantime, I'd like to mention some new folks that joined our Patreon this week. Yes, that's right. They wandered in through the beaded curtain known as the Filmsack Patreon, patreon.com/filmsack. And those people are Joe, Alex, and Steve. They all walked into a bar. What happened next? Well, you'll have to find out yourselves by going to patreon.com/filmsack and signing up today. If you like never having ads or having pre-show content every week or monthly specials from the hosts, this sort of stuff, trust me.
Speaking of which, weekend.
Oh, nice.
It's written. I just need to record it, which is going to happen today. And then I'm going to give it to Scott. Scott's going to give it to y'all. And
yep.
Scott's going to give it to you.
Yep.
Scott's going to give it to you.
You know what else you get as a patron, I should mention? We put the lyrics to Brian's weird song intros.
Yes.
I gave it to you guys early, by the way, because I thought that hearing the song without seeing the lyrics and missing things like Yoon Balloon and all the letters in No UFO OJ.
It's really good.
Right.
It's really good. And I'd be
confusing without reading.
Yeah. So we put those there, sometimes other stuff, and of course, bonus content. You'll also get art in the mail. There's so many reasons to join, hardly any not to. So go check it out, patreon.com/filmsack. I'm sorry, I'm being told in my ear there are no reasons not to. There's not hard
right.
reasons.
Oh,
there
are reasons. None. Yeah.
And
yeah.
you might get some of these pictures we post in a Discord server, like I just posted that Donna Mills picture on here, where it's like, choose your Donna Mills. Yeah. You can change your hair to any one of these colors.
Yeah.
She was the wife, right? She was
she was the commercial. She was the actress at the beginning when they're doing
What's
all this.
What's your horse's name?
Yeah. Yeah. But you may know her from a lot of...
Yeah.
You probably know Donna Mills from a lot of older stuff, but yeah, Knott's Landing, that kind of stuff.
That's what I was going to say. I feel like she was in that whole Dallas Falcon Crest Knott's Landing. Yeah. So that's what it was. It was Knott's Landing. Okay.
Right. But her IMDb, they've been kind enough to present you with all the versions of Donna Mills, like blonde, red, darker red.
It is the customize your character screen on every video game where you can do that. Yeah.
I don't want to freak you guys out, but this Starflight 1 is not only on Amazon Prime, not only on Paramount Plus, but it's also on Fubo, MGM Plus. Yes.
It's all everywhere.
Over. Yeah. We got to get it. We got to do it.
It's only an hour and a half, too, my favorite length of a movie.
Oh, that's a very good length of a movie.
Yeah. Oh, I lied. It's 1:54. What do you got? The director's cut?
This
here,
one says hour.
Listed for.
Just watch this 1:45, so it's all over.
Yeah, like I said, they must have the director's cut here on Paramount Plus.
Director's cut of Starflight 1?
Oh, I don't even say it could be 1:54 because it's a made-for-TV movies. Those things are usually 1.5 hours because they have to put in, 30 minutes worth of commercials.
Yeah.
Right.
No, you're not wrong. All right. One quick other note. Next week is not a film per se because we've got a bunch of travel going on, a whole bunch of people out of town, including Ibbot and I are on our way to TMS Vegas. We're going to see a bunch of you there. As a result, we're doing a special one-off topic episode. And so there will be content up on the feed that day. And that'll be what we do. We're not going to tell you what the topic is yet because you're going to have to find out for yourself. So tune in. That's next week. And then the week after that, we're doing Black Rain. Black Rain.
Yes.
Black Rain, 1989.
Michael Douglas gets wet.
He gets
black
wet.
Black Rain.
With black. Oh, boy, that'll stain. That'll stain with you.
Yeah.
All right. This is great news. I got to tell you a funny story real quick. Speaking of, I guess this is reminding me because of Black Rain. Last night, my wife said, hey, you should try this mask. It's really good. It'll make your face feel great. I said, okay, cool. So I put on this black mask and it looked like, goo. You spread it. It felt like tar. You spread it all over your cheeks and your forehead and.
Yeah,
and I used to do that.
Uh-huh.
And then I forgot that I had a Zoom meeting with somebody.
I was about to say, you had a black
mask. Yeah, basically had black face.
That's a bad idea.
Yeah. So I showed up to this meeting, turned it on, and they go, whoa. And I went, what? Completely forgot. Didn't look at my preview video. I just completely spaced it. And I'm like, oh, crap. And then I had to explain it. And then it came off in one big piece, which was really cool. But it was a stupid experience. I guess what I'm saying is don't blackface your Zoom calls. All right. That's what
Randy, do you think it's fun to do those face peels? I don't think it is. I have facial hair. I disagree.
I have nothing. I can't even I don't even like putting lotion. Like I don't moisturize my face. It feels like the wrong thing to do. This feels wrong.
Yeah, no, in different skin, different needs. Right. But the fun part. So I also have this beard. So I can only do cheeks, nose, and forehead, but being able to take that whole thing off like a big sticky like
yes,
yeah,
like a big old like fruit roll up.
Yeah,
one
like taking a fruit Elmer's glue in your face.
It's great.
That's exactly it, and I can't get. I kind of enjoyed it, if I'm honest. I just wish it wasn't black, and I had gotten on a call. That's all.
Right.
If I put a little coconut oil in my beard, like the littlest amount possible, I feel like my face is covered in Crisco.
Yeah, I don't like that feeling. I'm kind of with you on that. I don't like. My wife's like, "You're gonna stay younger if you moisturize." I'm like, "Yeah, but I'm gonna feel." Like
I don't want to stay young.
I feel like I'm working a fryer at McDonald's or something.
That's your dream.
Yeah, that's your dream. Let me be old and crusty. Right. Filmsack.com is our website. You know it. You love it. Go use it because it's got everything else there that you're ever going to need. So please do. And leave us reviews wherever you get your podcasts. That's going to do it for us, for me, for Brian, and for Randy.
Take a picture.
We'll see you next time.
It'll last longer.
If you like what you just heard, there's a very good chance you will like all the shows on the Frog Pants Network. Get more at frogpants.com.
Thanks.
Shit.